Hello, everybody. Good to be with you. I want to talk to you a little bit today about some of the myths surrounding enlightenment, because there's certainly no lack of them. When we're in still in seeking mode, we don't have any idea what enlightenment is actually like, and so we don't like to tell ourselves that, but it's the truth. And so we project what enlightenment must be like. And we now know we have some kind of idea. It's self-formulated, but we have some kind of idea, we think, of what enlightenment's going to be like for us when we get it. So we know what it must be like for those who already have it, who have already achieved this lofty status. I've made a little list of some of them over here. And just so I don't miss any big ones. So we'll go over these together. First one is the first myth is I'm awake now, so I should teach. God Almighty, is there anything less true than that? I watched somebody yesterday on, well, I just say I watched them on YouTube. And I watched somebody on YouTube yesterday. And this person has probably had some awakening experiences. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But this person's no teacher. This person is not a communicator. See, this thing is that awakening arrives where it arrives. And sometimes it arrives in a unit that's fit for teaching, and sometimes it doesn't. And it's not how well we get this thing or how grounded we are in it ourselves. Is really how well can we present that to others so that they can get enlightened. It's not about everybody knowing that I'm enlightened now, because doesn't that sound like an ego? But it's really about helping others. It's really about our ability to be of service to others. So can we adequately be a teacher or not? So check yourself. You'll be able to find out fairly soon if you can really do that or not. And if you find that you're a good teacher, teach if you feel like it. And if you even if you find you're a good teacher and you don't want to teach, don't teach unless unless it makes you. And then if it makes you, don't resist. Because you'll regret it if you do. So some of us should teach and some of us shouldn't, And I have a fairly good grasp of a number of things that I couldn't teach. And this one, I probably have less grasp on it than some, but I'm probably a better communicator than people who may have a bigger dose of this thing than me, see it deeper, wider, broader, whatever the hell you want to say about it. I see what I see and I know what I know, and that's what I share. And I don't know what I don't know. None of us do. But I don't pretend to know what I don't know either, and that is one big difference. And that may be also one of the signs of a decent teacher. Who knows? So if you're drawn there, do it. If you're not, don't. But don't go there if you're not. If you notice that people, don't get frustrated at people who are not following your message. Examine yourself and your message instead, because if you're talking to the right people. And you have the right message, they'll get it. They can't not get it. If people around you are not, quote, getting it, if you're not noticing that that there are regular awakenings taking place in your teaching, you're either talking to the wrong people or you are the wrong person to be talking. So, it's that simple, and we don't want to make it that simple. We want to make it complicated and convoluted so we don't have to look at ourselves, but that's been my experience. So another one thing would be another enlightenment myth is mental health, that the teacher should be, or the enlightened being should, whether it's teaching or not, should be beyond depression or despair. And that's what a projection that is. I mean, that's that perfection projection, isn't it? Because that's what we really do, is we really use the perfection projection when it comes to people that are in enlightenment. Even if we're awake, then we begin to apply it to ourselves, because I should be. But you'll notice that anytime you're saying I should be, other than the way I am, that you're not talking from clarity anymore. you're talking from cloudiness. You slipped back into the dream because you act the way you act. And there's no should about it. There may be preferable behavior. No question about that. But we're not actually running these shows. You know, there's no central decision maker here who's running things just right or screwing things up unmercifully. Where this is, you know, conditioning meeting circumstance, and as our conditioning lessens and lessens and lessens, then there's less condition to meet circumstance, which means there's more room for clarity. So this does get better as it goes along, but work with where you are. We'll talk about some more of this with some of these other myths. So this same thing comes with this emotional stability. What we really think is that we call it that we project that perfection projection is that the enlightened being should have emotional stability. But see, what we're calling emotional stability, somebody else might call emotional stagnation. In other words, we think they're beyond grief and beyond excitement, and all of these things, and simply that's not the case. We are available to fully feel grief. We are available to fully be excited and about what's going on, because we don't have any preconceived ideas about the way things should be. So, but we can have some preferences, and when things line up with our preferences, that can be exciting for an enlightened person. Or if they don't, or, you know, my God, if somebody near and dear to us dies or something like that, I mean, there's going to be profound grief, and we can be open to that. We don't have to resist that. We don't have to pretend that it doesn't exist. We don't have to make a show of things. For God's sake, we're not to make a show of things for students or clients or whatever. We get to be just whoever we are. That's what awakening really does, is it allows us to be who we are at that moment without a lot of webbing to go with it. In other words, we're just there. We're not pulling in all this conditioning after us. So another one is the perfection projection continues, and my teacher, I know, is wise in all things. And that's just really not. What a bunch of malarkey that is. Your teacher is wise in whatever your teacher's wise in, and your teacher's deluded in whatever your teacher's deluded in. That's certainly the case here. Is that I'm perfectly capable of being pulled into delusion and operating from delusion. I'm open to discovering that delusion because I'm not going to be married to any precondition or state. And as a result of constantly hosting that doubt about my own thinking, about my own position, then I'm living actually in a state of inquiry, and I'm suggesting that this my experience is not singular here. So we're living in constant inquiry, at which point we're always open to the truth, which includes the truth of delusion, which is noticing that, man, have I been out of it, and then moving on. See, there's not, oh God, I've just been out of it. I've been just, you know, operating from unconsciously for the last hour, and I shouldn't have done that. Damn. I thought I was better than that. I thought I was more awake than that. I just, you know, I mean, it's just, how heavy is all that? I mean, just notice, okay, I was operating from delusion. Thank God I'm not now. That's the thing to harp on, is the fact that I'm not now, and move on. Go to the next thing. But let's not use this perfection projection is just deadly, because it invests the teacher with too damn much to begin with, so that if my teacher, you know, was trustworthy to begin with, hell, my projections may weaken that all too human position. I mean, it takes two to tango, and even if one is awake and one is not, it still takes two to tango. And we need to be our brother's keepers, whether we are the teacher or we are the student. And we need to be aware of our personal power and try not to flaunt that around each other and try not to impress each other with that. I've done both. And and if we notice it happening from the other, let's be forgiving, but let's be alert. And because that's how teachers get in all these sex and power and money difficulties, and they're common in spirituality because teachers are invested with so much power, too much power. They don't have any power at all, but they're invested with tons of power by students and clients and stuff like that. And what I'm suggesting is that we take that a little bit more softly. Let's approach this with our eyes open. And I'm not talking about be skeptical, for God's sake. What I'm talking about is simply be alert. Do not be skeptical, please, because that's coming into this thing with preconditions, which is, prove me wrong. And what I'm suggesting is just be alert. Be alert to your own movements and motivations, and be alert to those of others around you in this own spiritual path. The last thing I want to cover is that this idea that enlightenment requires no maintenance. And this is another bit of malarkey that we're passed along. It's not maintenance in a sense that I need to, okay, I'm awake and I need to stay awake, because that's the unit talking. It's that I'm awake and I need to stay awake and I need to get up at 6 and meditate and do all that's just the unit. But I don't actually know what I need because I am awake. I know that I could be taken, pulled into sleep. What I also know is that that some, regardless of whether it's from the relative plane or not, that some practice and discipline that will be helpful in maintaining and expanding this clarity. Because that's what we're really talking about. Everybody's already awake. So we're not talking about really about waking up. We're talking about, am I living in clarity, the clarity of awakeness, or am I living in confusion, the confusion of awakeness that can accompany awakeness anyway, because it does all the time. Look around the world. There's 7 billion confused souls out there. I promise you that. So, and they're all awake, or none of them awake, either way you want to put it. But we just want to maintain vigilance. Who was it? Thomas Jefferson said that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And that's what I'm telling you here, is that the price of our freedom as awake beings is eternal vigilance, because the dream is incredibly strong, and it's been going on for an incredibly long time. It's built into our DNA. It's built into our condition. The deck, I promise you, is way stacked against us, even if we've had true sleep. Even if I'm operating currently from awakeness, the deck is stacked against me. And if I can just recognize that, see, that keeps me from getting too comfortable. That keeps me from deciding, well, you know, I've got this thing. I don't need to do anything at all. It's going to, it's going to stay here forever, because nothing is forever. And I'm either getting clearer or I'm getting cloudier all the time. And I see it happen here. I mean, I make no bones about it. I'm not always getting clear. Sometimes I'm getting cloudier. The good news is I'm willing to take an honest appraisal. I'm willing to notice that I'm not operating from clarity. And that allows me in that moment to be, I don't then have to get on some new program so that later I'm going to be operating from clarity. Seeing that I'm not operating from clarity is clarity in operation. That's the way that works. It's instant. And what I want to do is congratulate myself every time. Oh, man, that's wonderful. You saw through it. You were asleep as all get out, and that's great, because that gave you another opportunity to be alert and be awake right now. and I'm awake right now, and that's all that counts. So that's the end of my list. That's the end of the, but it ain't the end of the enlightenment myths. But that'll give us some idea of things that we can watch for, and things to be, you know, careful about in ourselves, our teachers, other awake folks, just people on the journey, and people at the drugstore. Talk to you later. Thanks a lot. Bye.